Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to another Arseblog Arsecast. It's been a mad week for Arsenal. There's lots to talk about, and we'll be doing that with the man from East Lower. Some usual bits and pieces on the way. I'll give you more info about that in just a second. Stay tuned. Welcome to a brand new Arsecast. It has been a bit of a strange old week for the club and for the fans, and there has been only one issue, one talking point, which has divided opinion, set fan against fan, brought about a whole new world of name-calling. And we will be addressing that issue in full on this podcast. Why did Nicholas Bentner change from pink boots to green boots? Fair enough, fair enough. I can take a hint. Anyway, we'll be talking about Aboué with the man from East Lower in a little few minutes' time. As well as that, the man in the bar will be here. He's got a player history. We've got Sylvester. And we've got your chance to win yourself a Savile Rogue scarf. 100% pure cashmere. Pure fashion around your neck. Pure warmth, too. We'll give you the winner of last week's competition and give you another chance to get one in time for Christmas, we hope. So between the last Arsecast and this Arsecast, there has been a lot going on. Overlooked amongst everything else is the fact that we actually beat Wigan 1-0. Two league wins in a row is pretty good for us this season. And I think, we've all kind of not necessarily lost sight of that. But, you know, there's been more interesting things to talk about, or more contentious things to talk about, you should say. The game itself, we should have probably won by two or three or four. And had we done that, I don't think we'd have been talking about anything other than a decent win. Irrespective of how somebody played or didn't play on the day. We had the chances, particularly in the second half, and Percy had a couple of good ones. Adi Bayor had a header or two, and we didn't take our chances. And it's no wonder this season that the crowd got nervous. We've seen this team throw away a two-goal lead at home against Spurs in injury time. So for us to concede one against Wigan and drop two more points is not even close to being beyond the realms of imagination. It was a distinct possibility, the way we've been playing. So it's little wonder the crowd were nervous and anxious and fretful and on edge, I think is a good way to put it. So their frustration was, I suppose, exacerbated by seeing somebody play as badly as Aboué did. And when you're in a situation like that, when you're that nervous, I'm not sure that the natural human reaction is positive, especially on the back of five league defeats already in a season. It's difficult to be a cheerleader when you're expecting the worst. That's what I think. And I think Aboué was probably a victim of circumstance more than anything else. I'm not saying that he didn't contribute to what happened. And I'll give you some further thoughts on this in a few minutes' time after I've spoken to the man from East Lower, because it has been, I suppose, one of the most debatable issues or debated issues that I can remember. Because, everybody's got a really strong opinion on it one way or the other. And I think that was shown this week on the blogs and some of the comments that were on the blogs and some of the emails and all kinds of stuff that I received. So it's worth talking about. So we'll come back. I'll come back to that in a couple of minutes' time. But to go through what happened on Saturday against Wigan a bit more, and to talk about where things are at the moment in light of the Porto game and ahead of the Middlesbrough game, we'll welcome the man from East Lower. Hello there.
Hi there.
Okay, we have to start with Aboué. I know a lot has been said about this during the week, and it's been a hugely divisive issue amongst Arsenal fans. You were there at the game. What was it like to experience it firsthand?
It is true. The crowd got on his back pretty early on, but then almost the very first thing he did was he was either kicking it out of touch or there was one hilarious bit when he kind of spooned it up and then gave away a free kick, and he was just shocking from the beginning. But they did start getting on his back straight away, and it was odd. I don't think I've ever seen the sort of groundswell just building up, and in the end he was a broken man, wasn't he?
Do you think that really had an impact on him in the way that the crowd, like you say, got on his back early? Do you think that really shattered his confidence, or should we expect more from a professional footballer, that even if the crowd are on their back a little bit, that they should be able to cope with that?
I think a bit of both. I think it definitely affected him. I think there's no two ways about it. I mean, booing was just left, right, and centre towards the end, and I think it definitely affected him. There's no doubt about it. Should he have done better? And maybe he should, but I do think it affected him. Having said that, you know, he did bring it on himself a bit. Why? He looked lackadaisical. He looked like he wasn't caring. If he'd hurtled around like a banshee, then it would have been all right. But he didn't, did he?
No. And then we came to this moment, the rock bottom. When he tackled Kolo Touré in midfield and just passed the ball straight to a Wigan player in midfield, it's sort of hilarious in concept, but when you see it happening in front of you, it's just not funny, is it? And it's no wonder that fans get frustrated.
No, it is no wonder, and it was almost comical. It just beggared belief. It was the sort of icing on the cake of a shambolic performance, and you know, people. They didn't know. I don't think they knew how to react, because one of the first errors he did, when it literally just come on, people just burst out laughing as if, oh God, here's a Boué again. And so it all sort of built up from there. And it was unbelievable tackling Touré, passing to a Wigan player. You know, that was. I don't really think he could have stayed on after that, and he didn't.
I mean, some people have said maybe Arsene Wenger was wrong to take him off because of the reception that he got when he came off. His number came up. There were loud cheers. Because people wanted to get him off the pitch, but because people obviously were nervous, they were afraid of him doing something catastrophic that might cost us the 3 points. But he really didn't have any choice of manager. He had completely and utterly lost the plot at that stage. Boué, I mean.
Yeah, he totally had. And I mean, I don't think Wenger was wrong to bring him off at all. I think where he was wrong was to bring him on in the first place. He didn't look like he was in the right frame of mind. Perhaps he wasn't fit. And then to stick him on the left midfield where he's many things in Boué, but he's not a left midfielder. And so I don't think that helped either. And it was, it was a strange one all round, really.
He got that reception when he came off, and it sparked a huge amount of debate for 2 or 3 days afterwards. There are those that will say that it is wrong 100% under any circumstances to boo your own player or to give your own player that kind of reception, that kind of jeering that a Boué got. There'll be others that would say, well, look, I pay my money to go to the games. If I see a guy that isn't putting in 100% effort or isn't trying, then I'm within my rights to express how I feel about his performance. And there really aren't too many ways fans can express themselves in games. And it was rather a sort of a spontaneous outburst. When his number came up, there was this cheering. How do you stand? I know that booing doesn't do him any good, and it probably doesn't do anybody any good, but you can't ignore the fact that there were reasons behind it.
No, you can't. I felt sorry for him. I really did when he was taken off. And I think the reaction became a bit personal, and it was over the top. So I think, on that level, I think it was too much. But, you know, fans have booed players ever since I've been going to Arsenal, but maybe not to that extent. But it was, I don't know, I think it had been building up. It was a combination of things with Boué. I think he has played some good games this season, some shockers, and it's been like that for 2 years. I mean, he had that great run at right back, and he doesn't seem to have kind of progressed from there. So maybe there was a bit of a build-up on that level, then probably a build-up also in the fact that we've looked really, really shaky against teams that we shouldn't be shaky against. And the fans, they do see a player who didn't look like he was putting the effort in, and he gets paid a lot of money. we're, you know, a lot of fans pay £900 to £1,500 a year for their season ticket, and quite honestly, the least you should expect is hard graft, and it didn't look like he was putting it in. Whether that's because he was injured, I don't know, but that's the perception on the field. So I find it hard to go over the top and blame the Arsenal fans who booed him, but I do feel it went too far.
Like you say, the reasons behind the booing, or the jeering rather, is because the team has underperformed this season, or maybe the reason is that the team is actually performing to its ability, which is the most worrying thing, because we saw in midweek against Porto, a lot of players were missing. It was a good opportunity for some of the players that are on the fringes of the first team to give us a good performance, to show us what they're made of. And it was worrying in the sense that it just really, really didn't click at all. And you have to start asking questions about the quality of some of the squad members.
Well, we've been asking that question, you have, and I have done too, and not just us, pretty much everybody, to be honest, for this whole season. We've had highs and we've had massive lows. The confidence doesn't seem to come back. The errors don't seem to be ceasing. But with yesterday's game, it was a dead rubber. We've had quite a few matches like that at the end of a Champions League group stage where it's been a bit meaningless and we've played a bit crap. But you would have thought these players, some of whom are probably fighting for their Arsenal careers. You know, you're looking at the Songs and the Bentners and some players like that who aren't, I mean, surely can't be guaranteed forever to kind of go straight to the first team. And you'd have thought maybe they put in a better performance than that, but they didn't. So that was the thing I found really strange about last night, is it looked like, again, where was the sort of kind of the commitment and the desire? With some of those players, I don't think it was there.
It is a worry, isn't it? Because we hear about Arsenal having the second highest wage bill, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think it's a case that they've got too much too soon, that they're not having to work as hard as guys maybe 10, 15 years ago to make their way in the game, to make the money that they wanted to make? They're not having to work as hard. It doesn't really make any difference whether they put in the effort or not. They've already got this kind of... They've established themselves as names simply because they're playing in the Arsenal first team at an age when maybe they wouldn't have even 5 years ago. There's no way half of these guys would have got anywhere near it. So is there that level of complacency, do you think?
I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't suppose having a pots of cash at a young age helps either, but I'm not so sure. If you look, you know, I think to become a sort of professional footballer at the very, very top level, you've got to have drive and ambition anyway. Otherwise, you're never going to make it. So, and that shouldn't go away. So I don't know where the money's the main thing there. I really don't know. Maybe it's a collective malaise that Arsenal have got. Well, it certainly feels that way. But yeah, I think some of these players perhaps are just not ready. You know, and they're not old enough and mature enough to sort of pick themselves up by their bootstraps. And quite honestly, some of the players, I think they really. I'm not saying we should flog them because they might come good, but some of them need a break out of the first team. And that's the way I kind of feel at the moment.
All right. Before we can do anything about adding to the squad in January, we've got a busy sort of a fixture list. We've got Liverpool at home. We've got Villa away, Portsmouth at home. And tomorrow we go away to Middlesbrough, which hasn't exactly been a happy hunting ground in recent seasons. Someone on the Arsblog forum said that if we want to beat Liverpool, we've got to lose tomorrow against Borough.
Well, why not make it around six in the league? You know, I think the last time I was on the Arsecast with you, it was straight after the Man U game, and we went on to lose that time to, was it Man City? I can't remember, but and I think we said exactly the same thing. We said, "What's going to happen?" We said, "I don't know. We could either turn up and play blinding football, or we could, you know, completely sink without trace." And we sank without trace. And I look at the Borough game, and I think exactly the same. I think we could win 2 or 3-0, or we could lose 2-0. I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to call, isn't it? We will, of course, have some players back. There's a great article on the Arsenal website. It says, the headline is, "You never know what you'll get from Borough." Someone's had an irony.
Maybe Borough was the wrong subject line there.
yeah, it's hard to see otherwise. Confident that we could get 3 points? Well, I mean, we just don't know, do we?
I think the left-hand side of me is confident and the right-hand side of me hasn't got a clue. I honestly don't know. I mean, if you look at it, we've won two league games in a row. If we can get a third league win and then head into the Liverpool game, I don't know, it's a modicum of form, isn't it? Then we could be... I think at this stage, we just got to head to the January transfer window in contention and take it from there. It's a sad thing to say, but it's probably the truth.
And keep our fingers crossed that he actually spends some money. Okay, man.
Well, that's another thing altogether, isn't it? Yeah.
It sure is. All right. Listen, thanks very much. We'll chat to you again soon.
Will do. Cheers. No worries.
Cheers to the man from East Lower. Now, before we move on, my final thoughts on Eboué, because I've been called all kinds of names this week because I didn't come out and condemn the fans that booed or jeered Eboué. My thinking on this, right, is that I am in no position to call any group of Arsenal fans a disgrace or a shambles or anything else. All I ever do on my blog is I give you my opinion on Arsenal and what we do and who we buy and who we play and how we play them, etc. That is all I do and all I have ever done and all I ever will do. So I will not, under any circumstances, speak for what might be considered a group of Arsenal fans or Arsenal fans in general. I will not ever do that because it is the height of arrogance, I think. So, my opinion on the Eboué thing was that it's not nice to hear it. I felt sorry for him going off. I did feel sorry for him. But you have to look at why the crowd reacted in that way. If you say it is wrong to boo players, 100% you should never, ever boo your own players, it's counterproductive, etc., etc., that is absolutely fine. In the cold light of day, that makes perfect sense. At the end of a football game, when passions are high and inflamed and people are nervous and anxious and they're worried and they're angry at someone like Eboué for the performance that he put in, you cannot take away human nature from people's reaction. You just can't do it. And to just blanket say that you can't boo your own players is doing no...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Nobody any good at all if you ignore why it happened. If you don't look at the circumstances, if you don't try and understand the reasons why so many fans in that stadium chose to cheer Eboué's number when it came up. They were happy to see him go off. It's just kind of wiping it under the carpet if you don't discuss it. You can't simply write off all those people as cunts or bad fans or a disgrace. And I think, personally speaking, I think the reaction from some fans was over the top. It was hysterical. You read about some people saying they were ashamed to be Arsenal fans. I mean, what the fuck is that about? It wasn't nice. It wasn't particularly edifying in any way. But why would you be ashamed to be an Arsenal fan over something like that? a guy who played badly, who has played badly for a long time, and has upset a lot of fans with his antics, he got some stick from the crowd. It's not the end of the world. And I think, given the circumstances of the season, and not just the Wigan game, the season, I think that Ebue became somebody through whom the crowd could make a point to Arsene Wenger. Maybe that's not the best way of making a point, but it's very, there aren't too many other ways they can do it. So I'm not saying that it's right to boo players. All I'm saying is that you have to look at why it happened. And if you don't look at why it happened, if you bury your head in the sand and just completely say it's wrong, no matter what the circumstances, then I don't think you're doing yourself any favours at all. You're not doing the players, you're not doing the manager, and you're not doing the rest of the fans any favours. Of course, in an ideal world, something like this wouldn't happen, and we wouldn't have to discuss it, and we wouldn't have to be falling out or calling each other names, and that's what's happened this week. And it's been kind of sad, really, I think, that so many Arsenal fans have been having a go at each other. But I think, again, that's possibly summing up the frustrations of the season. I just don't know that it was that much of a big deal. And maybe if it gets a message home to Ebue or to any other player that if you don't put the work in, you don't put the effort in, if you play like that, then you're going to have a hard time to keep the crowd on side. As I said, in the cold light of day, it's easy to say you don't boo your own players. It's really easy to say it. And maybe it will be better if it never, ever happened. But people are people, you know? The reaction that they have, I think I said it on the blog, that when you see a guy tackle his own player in midfield and then pass the ball directly to the opponent, who can then go towards your goal in the last couple of minutes of a game in which you're hanging on, the natural reaction is not a positive one. It is not, oh, better look next time, Ebue. Come on, old chap, you know. It's not. It's like, for fuck's sake, what are you doing? What are you on about? So the reaction that he got from the crowd was generated by circumstances, by his performance, by the team's performance, by the team's performance over the season, by the manager's team selections, by the players that he's bought or the players that he hasn't bought. And the standards that Arsene Wenger has set at Arsenal Football Club have been very, very high. He's the one that set those standards. And when they slip, then you can't expect people not to react to that. That's all. That's what I think. And maybe I'll get a whole load more emails calling me a cunt, but frankly, I don't care. It's just what I think. So there you go. Anyway, the man in the bar has got a player history.
Hey, hello there, Eric and Ars blogger. Time for another old player history. What, huh? Got your Christmas shopping done? No? Nah, me neither. God, I've such a lot to do. I really do. What with me having all those extended family coming round for dinner and everything, and actually, that's kind of a lie. I don't have any family left at all. They're all gone. I'm so terribly, terribly alone. But moving on, I suppose all the news this week, well, there's only one talking point, isn't there, after what happened? Thomas Rosicky is out until March. What the bloody hell's going on with that fella at all? He only got a bit of a hamstring injury. Eduardo got his leg wrapped around his neck, practically, and he'll be back sooner. And all the while, Rosicky gets paid. It's a footballer's life, let me tell you. I remember a young Polish fella working in here behind the bar. Very good lad he was. And he took in a stray dog, and he caught distemper and meningitis off the dog. Oh, he was in an awful state. Frothing at the mouth, he was off work for a week. And when he came back, only one side of his face worked, so when he smiled, he looked like a yin and yang kind of a thing. He didn't get paid for the time off. Should have been a footballer, though, I suppose. Anyway, this week for the player history, I was trying to think of something a little bit different. What could set one player aside from any other player? And then it came to me. Vowels. No, not bowels. Vowels. Who's the only footballer ever to have played for Arsenal without a vowel in his first name? That's right, it's Reece Wilmot. Now, he wasn't the only player at Arsenal not to have a vowel in his first name. There was one other too. Many years ago, a young lad called Murphy from Urlingford in County Kilkenny. He made the bench back in the 1970s. Never got on, though, and went back to Ireland and became a pig farmer. Killed himself this week, I hear. Poor old... life is hard for some people. So Reece Wilmot was a goalkeeper, you know. He joined Arsenal in 1977 as a schoolboy, turning professional in 1980. He was the understudy to Pat Jennings and John Lukic, and also to George Wood, which is a fairly good indication of his quality. He didn't really play too many games, made his debut against Aston Villa on March 28, 1986. And in the 86-87 season, he had a few games in while Lukic was out, but he was never able to break into the first team. He left Arsenal to join Plymouth Argyle and also played for Grimsby Town, Crystal Palace and Torquay United. Nowadays, Reece Wilmot draws caricatures of people at weddings for a living. He's only been punched twice. It's true.
The Man in the Bar will return on next week's Arscast with another player history. He mentioned Thomas Rosicki. As we heard, he's going to be out until March at the earliest. And the longer it goes, the more and more you have to think that it's going to be just impossible, even if he does come back, to ever reach the level that we had sort of hoped he would be at. It seems fairly clear that they don't really know how to fix what's wrong with him. Because initially it was September, then October, then Christmas, now March. And I don't think anybody will be surprised if in March they told us it was going to be the start of next season or another 4 months or 5 months or 6 months. And while I do feel sorry for Rosicki, I really do, because I was playing football the other night and... about 15 minutes into the game, we got a penalty, and I took the penalty, and I scored the penalty, and then as I hit the ball, my calf muscle went, and I had to come off and spend the rest of the game standing on the sidelines, which is hugely frustrating, even at the very, very basic level I play football at. And it is very, very basic, let me assure you of that. So to not be able to play must be awful. It must be truly, truly awful. On the other hand, it's counterbalanced by all the money that you're earning. But I'm not sure that's the issue for Rosicki. However, from our point of view, we have to look, I think, a little bit beyond him now. And given the fact that we are desperately light on the flanks, we've got Nasri, we've got Walcott, but beyond that, we don't really have any kind of backup. Diaby is not a winger. Aboué is not a winger. Carlos Vela is not a winger. Robin van Persie isn't. None of those are wide midfield players. So we have to maybe think, as much as we need a central midfielder and as much as we need at least one central defender and at least one central midfielder, but we could possibly need a wide midfielder as well. If Rosicki's not back till March, when you're out for that long, it's going to take, I don't know how long to get back into form and match fitness and get your sharpness back and your touch and all that kind of stuff. So it's sad, I think, what's happened to Rosicki. And to be honest, I really would be surprised if we ever saw him performing at the top level for us again, which is sad. But I think we have to put sentiment to one side and look at the realities of the situation and think about what's best for the team. Now, moving swiftly on... In our Savile Rogue competition last week, I asked you, who scored the second goal in Arsenal's 2-0 win over Wigan at the Grove last season? It was, of course, Thomas Rosicki. And the random number generator did its thing. The winner of the scarf is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, it's Matt Zakiri. Matt Zakiri, well done to you. You've got yourself a Savile Rogue scarf. I'll pass on your details. Actually, I'll be in touch to get more details from you because there's no address. I'll be in touch to get your address. And we'll get Savile Rogue to send out the scarf to you. Very kindly, Savile Rogue have given us another scarf to give away. Arsenal beat Middlesbrough 7-0 just a few seasons ago. Thierry Henry scored a hat-trick in that particular game. The other scorers were Pires, Gilberto, Alexander Chleb, and who else? That's six goals. Henry scored the hat-trick. Gilberto, Pires, Chleb, and who else? Answers to arscast@arsblog.com. That is arscast@arsblog.com. And the answer will be on next week's show.
Hello, everyone. It's me again, Sylvester. I know that after a few months at the club, everybody is saying, why did Manchester United let somebody like Sylvester go to Arsenal, one of their great rivals? Well, I have to say the answer is simple. It's because I have an enormous big arse and very little footballing ability. Zut alone.
So, looking ahead to the weekend's game against Middlesbrough, it hasn't been the funnest place for us to go to in the last few years. At the Riverside, we've had some big wins there in the past. Some 4-0s and 4-1s and 5-1s and 6-1s and all kinds. But in 2005-2006, we got beaten 2-1. We drew 1-1 in 2006-2007. And last season, we only got 1 point out of six from Middlesbrough. They drew with us at home and then beat us 2-1, which was our first defeat of the season. So, yeah, we've got to put that behind us and make sure that we get 3 points. Nothing less than 3 points is required, of course. Some team news. Well, Kolo Touré is still out. Samir Nasri is out. Eduardo out. He's penciled in for a reserve game on the 16th of December. And it'll be good to have him back because it'll give a bit of pressure, I suppose, on someone like Bentner. But we need someone like Eduardo back, who's a quality finisher and a quality player. And the sooner we get him back, the better our squad becomes, the better our team becomes. Players who missed the game against Porto in midweek should be back. Gael Clichy, Cesc Fabregas, Robin van Persie, Emmanuel Adebayor, and Bakary Sagna should be back, although there are still doubts over him because he's got some kind of flu or virus or something like that. So fingers crossed. I don't know what could happen. You just don't know with this Arsenal team. We could play really, really well. We could do what we did to Blackburn, for example. Or we could just do what we did against Manchester City. You just do not know from 1 week to the next how this Arsenal team is going to perform. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we do all right. We get 3 points out of the game. I don't care how we do it. I said it last week. It doesn't really matter to me how we get the 3 points once we get them. We did that last week, and fingers crossed we can do that again this weekend. So until next week's Arscast, take it easy. I'll talk to you all next week on the blog and, of course, on next week's show. Bye.
Chocolate leg. Alex Song is playing for Arsenal. Chocolate leg. What the fuck is going on? Chocolate leg. Robin Van Persie has got that. Chocolate leg. They are better than Alex Song's real legs. They look like they are made of dead trees. Chocolate legs. Jesus Christ, I'm gonna kill myself. Jack the Legs. Here I go, I'm gonna shoot my brains out of my head. This is so fucking annoying. Chocolate leg.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.